Eagles Entertainment.
There ain't anything that moves. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast. Play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time. Let's go.
Touchdown.
You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right of the day. We've got a lot to talk about as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 504. At the top of today's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films to talk about a tough loss for the Eagles down in Dallas. We're going to talk about everything we saw from the tape and in the game against the Cowboys in Week 14 and how this team will try and bounce back on Monday Night Football against the Seattle Seahawks. We've got a lot to dive into with matchups on both sides of the football in that one. Before we get going with Greg, as always, head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating, leave us a comment, leave us a question. We'll answer your questions on an upcoming episode of the podcast. We got a lot to dive into. Like I said, let's dive right in. It's time now for our chat with Greg in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
All right, back and better than ever, my friend Greg Cosell, to go through the tape here with the Eagles' loss to the Dallas Cowboys. We've gone through it throughout most of the day on Monday. We're getting ready to talk some Eagles-Seahawks on the back end of this conversation. But Greg, first, let's talk about this loss on the road down in Dallas. Obviously, the second in a row here for the Eagles. The first time they are on a losing streak with Jalen Hurts at quarterback since October of 2021. So unfamiliar territory for Eagles fans and certainly for the team as well. They had a losing streak last fall, but fans will remember that was when Gardner Minshew was a quarterback and not Jalen Hurts. And so, a lot to talk about and dissect here from this one.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. In watching the tape, and obviously the score and the fact that they didn't score an offensive touchdown, you know, obviously informs a certain point of view. But as I watched the tape, I kind of felt that there were three really big plays in the game.
Okay.
And tell me what you think. I thought, obviously, the Cooks 30-yarder late in the second quarter was a really big play.
Yep. So that was the post in front of James Bradbury. Yep.
Correct. Which led to the touchdown that obviously made it, you know, 24-6.
Sure.
And then I thought, and I'm sure you'll remember this play, where Jalen left the pocket. I believe this was in the third quarter, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It was second and 11 late in the third quarter, and Jalen just overthrew Smith in the end zone off second reaction movement on second and 11. I'm sure you remember that play.
Yeah, it was a tough one because, you know, Devontae's able to get two hands on it. He got two mitts on it. It's you don't want to, like, put that down as a drop, but either way, falls incomplete. That's a tough one for both guys.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen that play made a number of times the last couple of years by Jalen and by Devontae, I guess, as well, but certainly by Jalen Hurts. And the other play that I thought was really big was the Ferguson 32 yards on the zero blitz, which came on the possession right after the Carter 42-yard fumble return, I believe made it 27-13, correct?
Yeah, that to me was the one. Like, as we were in the moment, I said this is a huge momentum swing, fulcrum point in this game.
Yeah, and I thought that you know, that play, because, you know, the Eagles obviously went zero. They were in dime, and Bradbury and Byard blitzed into, the separate A-gaps. Byard got in clean, and he hit Prescott's arm just after the ball came out. Didn't truly affect the throw. It was an unbelievable throw by Prescott. It beat really good coverage by Brown. I mean, it wasn't if Brown was beaten badly, but it was just one of those plays where, you know, you got to tip your hat to Prescott and Ferguson, and it was a really, really important play in the game. It was third and six. It was after the fumble recovery, and you had the sense watching the game that, you know, hey, maybe if they stop him here, maybe they make a big play, then we might have a ball game.
And that's the thing is that, you know, the Eagles kind of had them on their heels a little bit. If they're able to get that stop, then you get the ball back. You go out and you put points on the board, and now it's a one-score game. And now, you know, now it's anybody's ball game at that point. That's why in that moment, you could feel that this was one of the biggest plays of the game. Let's start on defense just because we're talking through defense now. to me, again, I mean, the big thing is third down again, right? This is a unit that has struggled on third down throughout most of the season, but especially over these last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, sure. It's been a tough go on third down. And, you know, you get asked about it all the time. We talked about it last night on the postgame show, and it's not one of those things where you look at and you say, all right, well, you fix this one thing. It's, well, this one personnel change, or, you know, this one schematic thing, and you're all better, right? That's not how it works, because, you know, even going through the first couple of third downs in the game, you had a Kevontae Turpin 22-yard end around on third and one. You had a Dak Prescott quarterback sneak on third and one. You had a third and two in the red zone, CeeDee Lamb's touchdown on the opening drive, where, you know, it's a scramble drill situation.
Right.
Nobody plasters CeeDee Lamb. You know, both linebackers really kind of had a shot at him, and neither one took it, which would have been perfectly legal in that point with Dak outside the pocket, and Lamb's able to shake free for a touchdown. And then the very next drive, you get I think it was a 28-yard completion, a 26-yard completion to CeeDee Lamb on third and nine on a post-corner route where he just routed up Bradley Roby. It was a great route by a great player, right? So all four of those things happened for four very distinct reasons. And, you know, you can fix some of them you can't fix. And it's like, all right, yeah, that's a great play by the other team. But altogether, this is certainly an issue that needs to be corrected for this unit.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that probably stands out, you know, and the numbers suggest that it does stand out. So it's not, you know, you're interpreting the tape as well, but the numbers suggest is they've not been able to generate the same kind of pass rush with their D-line that they did a year ago, particularly on third down.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that probably stands out that I think has surprised us all. You know, so if they can get that fixed, you know, they have good players. I mean, I don't think that all of a sudden these players aren't any good. You know, it's just the way some years work out. But to me, that's probably been the one thing that has really stood out on third down, just the lack of consistent pass rush from that down group, whether you want to say it's a down five or a down four, depending on the down and distance, field location, all those things that go into who's on the field. But that probably is the thing that stands out the most.
Well, I think the big thing, and you can call it a down five on third down, because one of their big packages that they like to get to has five guys down on the line of scrimmage. Typically, it's four defensive linemen, three DNs and a D tackle, or two and two. And then you had Zach Cunningham down there as well. And so having those five guys down on the line of scrimmage, you had six defensive backs behind them. And really one of the big things, and this was kind of a changing point that really had a huge effect on the way that the rotations kind of worked out in this game, was second play of the third series. So first series of the second quarter, Reed Blankenship goes down with his injury. So when he goes down, that really kind of had a ripple effect on the way that the Eagles were going to play from a rotation standpoint, because early on in that dime package, you had Slay and Bradbury on the outside. You had Roby in the slot, Byard as the tight end matchup. And then you had Reed Blankenship and Sidney Brown as the deep safeties. Well, after that that injury to Blankenship, now Sidney Brown and Kevin Byard, they're the deep safety. So Byard is no longer the tight end matchup. James Bradbury, he kicked inside as the tight end matchup.
Yeah.
Eli Ricks came in for Roby. And I'm assuming, Greg, I want to get your thoughts here. Yeah, I think Eli Ricks came in for Roby because this also affected the big nickel or the big penny package, that 5-1-5 group where Bradley Roby had to go in as that nickel corner in that package instead of Sidney Brown. And now they were like, all right, well, we have to kind of make these snaps work from a rotation standpoint. Let's get Ricks into the dime package. And then Keely Ringo came in on the outside as well. And so a lot of moving parts after that injury. You mentioned one of the big moments in the game was that completion to Ferguson in the third quarter. And that was in that dime.
Sidney Brown was the tight end matchup.
Yeah,
Sidney Brown was the tight end matchup. Yep. By the way, you know, you did Sidney Brown coming out of Illinois, correct?
Yep.
I actually thought one of his strengths, believe it or not, because he was essentially a box safety at Illinois, but he matched up to tight ends in college. And I remember thinking that's a real positive for him as he transitions to the league. You know, I thought there were other things he needed to work on and learn, as every college player does, as you know. But, you know, I remember watching him against Iowa. I thought he did an outstanding job against Sam Laporta, who's turned out to be a dominant receiving tight end as a rookie. I remember, I think, the first throw of the game against Michigan State, he made an interception where he was just Velcroed to the tight end. So, you know, he actually played the tight end really well man-to-man in college. I think that's something as his career progresses, you know, however it turns out, and he gets more playing time, I think he'll be able to do that well.
Yeah, that'll be something to watch, certainly, with him and his skill set. I thought that he actually had a pretty good game overall last night. I thought it was one of his better showings. He came downhill against the run pretty well in this one. And then that big PBU they had against CeeDee Lamb on the vertical route outside the numbers, to me, like, that was not something that we necessarily saw from him in college, was because, as you mentioned, he was more of a box player playing close to the line of scrimmage. They kind of let him roam at times in some of those heavy sub packages and just kind of let him be like a monster back. And in this situation, it was like, all right, well, can he play the deep part of the field? You know, can he get these angles down coming downhill or playing towards the sideline? On that play to Lamb, it was a second and long play. He took a perfect angle to the catch point. Didn't get there early, no interference, did an outstanding job playing the ball. That led to an incompletion there, and it brought up third and long, and the Eagles were able to get a stop.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you, though. I think that they had to make some adjustments in how they wanted to play their personnel when Blankenship got hurt. And, obviously guys practice in different positions, you know, they cross train, they do that, but still you're not necessarily going into a game with the idea that it's going to play out that way. And they had to make some adjustments.
Yeah. And look, at the end of the day, going back to the initial point about the defense, that they've got to get better on third down and for a lot of different things. I mean, look, there were three PI calls on third down. That's three opportunities to get off the field. And you could argue, some of those obviously were more ticky tack than others. Maybe the flags shouldn't have been thrown, but the flags were thrown.
Right.
Could not get off the field in those situations. They've had things work in their favor in the past this season. So, this time the ball bounced the other way from that aspect, but the Eagles just could not get off the field. They had another one where it was third and nine, and Jalen Carter lined up offsides, and that brought up third and four, and then third and four. So these penalties, they had four penalties on third down, the miscues on third down. That's something that has to get fixed getting into the postseason.
And it just raises an interesting question, which is there's no easy answer to this, by the way, as you know, and if people think there is, there isn't. And this is why coaches work the hours that they do. You know, as we said, this was a team last year whose defense was built on being able to rush the quarterback with their down group, their D line. When that's not doing as well as you would have expected going into the season, you have to decide, hey, is this the way we do it and guys are just going to play better because they're really good players? Or do you have to say, well, we have to start doing different things that are sort of outside of the way we really want to play and we feel good about playing? That's not an easy answer to that. And if people think there is, they're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, they're trying to find some different ways. And we saw some different exchange pressures, which we've seen throughout the season. Those didn't really get home. The Eagles have not been a particularly effective blitzing team so far this year.
No.
The stunts have not been especially effective over the last few weeks, especially.
No, they haven't done it as much, I've noticed. They tried to move some people around this week, give different looks. Sweat was a joker at times. Reddick, played three or four different positions along the front. We know Graham always does that.
Yeah, but nose, yep.
They had Reddick and Sweat on the same side a couple of times, both outside the offensive tackle. So, they're trying to do some things to create some pressure, without having to blitz. And, the thing is, a lot of people might say, Fran, and you know this as well as I do, we've been doing this a long time, well, just blitz. Well, you have to have good blitzers. And, Cunningham has never been a big blitzer in his NFL career. That's not the strength of his game. Morrow's never been a big blitzer in his NFL career. It's possible that's one reason why they brought in Leonard. There were some four-man simulated zone exchange pressers in which Leonard was the fourth rusher, but he's been a good blitzer in his career. So we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, he just got there. You weren't going to expect him to play 50 snaps and look great. I think he only played 14 or 15, but he's obviously going to get more time as we continue.
Yeah, that'll be certainly something to watch, is that linebacker rotation. Really quickly, just as we transition over to the offense, I thought the defensive line, the two guys that kind of stood out to me on film, I thought Jordan Davis had another solid showing, made some good plays early and then showed up late as well. And then Fletcher Cox, I mean, look, he went into that game against San Francisco where it was like, oh, I don't know if he's going to play, coming off the groin, gets a sack in that game and showed up in that game. And then here in this one, I thought he showed up numerous times in the run game and then obviously had the sack fumble of Dak Prescott.
That where he beat Zach Martin. That looked like Fletcher from 10 years ago.
Yeah, so just, I think tip of the cap to the veteran there. Fletcher, I think, has been playing really well this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he's kind of blown me away given his age and how many snaps he's logged in his career. But I think for the most part, he's played really good football this year.
All right, well, let's go over to the offensive side. And, you know, you mentioned that you watch it, and obviously, you know, no touchdowns scored in the game. I'm pretty sure that was the only time that has happened in the Nick Sirianni era here in Philadelphia, that the Eagles did not reach the end zone.
That is correct.
When you turn the ball over three times in opponent territory, and really also at, like, terrible times from a momentum standpoint, Greg. I mean, opening drive, turnover. Opening drive of the second half. So you think, all right, let's get some momentum here. Turnover. Opening drive of the fourth quarter. This is your shot to really kind of, you know, make, you know, try and stay in this game. Turnover again. All three of them on positive plays, like that would have been first downs for the offense.
Yes.
In territory. Those are backbreakers. Those are tough to bounce back from.
Without question. You know, and it obviously started on the first drive. And I thought the one to start the third quarter drive was really tough because they came out kind of running the ball and they had some sustaining success. I think there were three zone type runs that had success with Swift. You know, and I'm sure a lot of people watching, you know, live felt like, okay, you know, yeah, they're down 24-6, but they're going to come out. They're going to run the ball. They get a touchdown here. We have a ball game. And then, you know, one of your best players, you know, Brown fumbles off the quick slant when tackled by Gilmore. And, you know, it all falls apart at that moment. But you're right. It's hard. It's certainly hard when you fumble if, you know, off good plays, you know, plays that produce first downs.
Yeah. I mean, that first drive of the second quarter, or of the second half, rather, as you mentioned, it was the first three plays, 19 yards for Swift, AJ fumble on the fourth one. And just talking through the run game, you know, I think that, you know, we had talked about how the Eagles had kind of missed on had missed that presence on the ground, that assertiveness, that consistency with the rushing attack. I think they kind of got their groove back a little bit here in this one. A lot more of these vertical runs, getting downhill. First play of the game, we saw Jordan Mailata and Landon Dickerson blowing the three technique off the ball on the play side, and Swift was able to get downhill. We talked about that first drive of the second half. I think that they were able to get some things going. We saw the quarterback runs continue to be a factor as well. So I think that's something that they can build off of here in this one. Obviously, the game flow kind of took away the volume, but I thought the effectiveness was there, and that's something we had not seen over the last few weeks.
No, and I think that's been a major difference from last year to this year, in the sense that the way the games have been played, you know, last year the Eagles would get up big. Remember, they kept scoring a ton of points in the second quarter. I think they scored the most points in the second quarter, Fran, a year ago, and they were always up big in the second half.
Right.
And that's when you can build your volume in the run game. The games have not played out that way this year, so it's been kind of tough. You know, because you have to decide whether a run game is about commitment and volume. You know, it's not about, hey, here's one handoff, let's get it for 40 yards. You know, the run game is about, you're going to get one, you're going to get two, you're going to get minus one, you're going to get eight, then you're going to get seven, then you're going to get one, then you're going to get 12. You know, but in order for that to happen, there has to be some volume to it. And for whatever reason, you know, this year the games have played out differently. So, they just haven't stayed with the run as much as, you know, they were able to do a year ago.
Well, that's what's funny, like, because, you know, obviously there's been a lot talked about and written about and complained about and, signs made about, this team, the poor starts and, you know, what is going on with the game planning. And I'm old enough to remember, Greg, when it was like, you know, last year, 13 months ago, when it was, oh, this team is terrible in the second half. What is going on? They're letting teams back into it. And it's like, yeah, like, you know, the flow of the game, you know, changes a little bit. Every season, teams are a little bit different in a lot of ways. And it's just funny that that's how this has gone over the course of this year. But that then dictates, you know, how you're going to play in the second half.
No question. I mean, and the games have been different. They've been behind in a lot of games. Say what you want. I mean, you know, I've talked to a lot of offense coordinators over the years, and it's hard to run the ball and stay with it when you're behind. Because, you know, as I said, you get a lot of 1 yard gains. And you know, when an offensive coordinator or a play caller sees second and nine, that doesn't really excite him a whole lot. So, you know, he doesn't necessarily feel like running the ball in the third quarter late when you're behind. And, you know, that's just the way it is for teams in the league.
Yeah. Getting back over to the pass game, you know, we talked a little bit about some of these plays already, but just a weird game in that, you know, A.J. Brown, he had a couple balls that hit the ground that were uncharacteristic. You talked about the one key one to Devontae Smith in the end zone. He had another one over the middle of the field, and he had another one off an RPO corner route as well that, you know, that hit the ground that he probably typically comes up with, and both guys fumbled in this game. So it was kind of uncharacteristic that, you know, again, two of your best playmakers just didn't make enough plays in this game. And I think both those guys would say, like, yeah, like, you know, obviously we both have to be better. I thought Jalen Hurts overall, not perfect, certainly in this game, certainly also better than last game against San Francisco, which we talked about last week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because he, you know, obviously had the fumble as a runner, but he didn't throw an interception. He didn't turn it over. I thought for the most part, he was fine. I mean, he, you know, obviously it's easy to say, well, they didn't score a touchdown, so that means he's bad. But if you just isolate his play, I don't think he played poorly as an individual.
Yeah, the 30-yarder on the opening drive to Devontae Smith on the dagger concept against cover two was great. You know, stepping up into the teeth of the rush against the pressure from Dallas. He had a couple nice throws and nice post-snap reads in this game. And some of those plays, like if A.J. Brown comes up with that one along the sideline, Devontae Smith catches that ball in the end zone, we're going crazy, much like we did for the Olamide Zaccheaus touchdown. In the fourth quarter a couple weeks ago against Buffalo. But that is not how things bumped in this game. Really quickly, they also lived in 11 personnel this one.
What did you make of that?
Obviously, the return of Dallas Goedert, I think, probably had something to do with that as well. Just making sure you always had your best guys on the field. And, you know, Jalen Hurts certainly looked his way, looked their way, I should say, because the only guys that received targets in this one, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert. Nobody else saw a target from Jalen Hurts in this game.
Yeah, that, I know. I noticed that. And that's that was interesting. But, you know, they're the three best players, and you'd like to see them be volume targets on a regular basis. Now, I mean, there might be some games where the defense takes that away and it doesn't play out that way, but they're your three best receivers, and you don't want to get stuck in a game where, you know, Dallas Goedert has two targets or Devontae Smith has three targets. You want to make sure that you're throwing it to your best players.
You know, it's just it's funny because obviously in games that had not gone either, like where the Eagles lost or where it was closer than fans would have liked, you know, people will point to, oh, well, why are you throwing this wide receiver screen to Julio Jones? Why isn't that ball going to the? But now when it goes the other way, it's like, oh, well, they got to get other guys involved. There's always the other side of the argument to make.
There always is.
All right, let's get into this matchup here against the Seattle Seahawks, because obviously a very important game. The Eagles really, you know, you don't want to lose three in a row at any point, but certainly not at this stage of the season. The Eagles still control their destiny when it comes to the division. They'll need a little bit of help when it comes to number one seed against the San Francisco 49ers, just because San Francisco will have the tiebreaker. But the Eagles very much still alive for the number one seed in the NFC East. And so that will start here with a game against Seattle, a team that Dallas has already beaten. So you'd like to get a win here against them as well. Let's start with the Seahawks offense. A little bit of a new look for them this week, just because Geno Smith was out of the lineup with a groin injury, so you had Drew Lock in at quarterback. But when you look at the Seattle offense over the course of this season, because you expect Geno Smith to probably be back here in the lineup here this week, what is their identity? What is it that is kind of like, right, this is their mission statement as an offense?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I remember last year, they were a heavy multiple tight end offense. And actually, Geno Smith was outstanding passing the ball with their concepts out of 12 and 13 personnel, two and three tight end personnel packages. Because their second of two first-round picks, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, got hurt in training camp and basically missed most of it, they started the season back with their multiple tight end personnel. And, you know, I think Smith was very comfortable with a lot of those concepts. There was a lot of play action. There was a lot of play action boot. I'm sure you've seen all this. And, you know, he was clearly comfortable, because a lot of that gives you clear, defined reads. They're either one read or no read type throws. And Geno was very comfortable, very efficient. But they obviously drafted Smith-Njigba, who I think you and I both really like coming out of Ohio State, based on his tape the year before his last year. And they drafted him clearly with the idea that they would play more 11 personnel because they have Metcalf and Lockett. And they've sort of evolved into that as the season has progressed. And because I watch them every week, Fran, to my way of thinking, they're trying to find the right balance. And I think it's taking a little time. And one reason why Geno Smith this year has not been bad by any means, but been a little more up and down than he was a year ago, just because I get the sense that Shane Waldron, who I believe it's his offense and he runs it, he's their OC. You know, I think they're trying to figure out what's the best balance situationally, you know, in all the things that go into putting together a game plan. What's the best balance between our multiple tight end sets and our 11 personnel with three wide receivers? And I think they're working through that. And I think sometimes it looks really good, and I think other times it looks a little shaky.
Yeah, and so as they try and kind of find and crystallize that identity, what we can kind of do on the outside is, all right, like we can see like the ups and downs a little bit, but then also look at these guys in a vacuum. And when you look at
Geno, they're talented. They have talented people.
No question. And Geno is still playing really well. I mean, I think that obviously there are some games where he'd like to have back, but even watching them when, they lose to San Francisco, and that was a tough one. He's playing, dealing with the shoulder injury at that point. But you watch him the following week against Dallas.
He was really good against Dallas.
He was really good in that game. I mean, there was a term, I'm trying to remember exactly who said it online, and it was outstanding. I love this one, that he plays with irrational confidence. Just his ability to deal with pressure, attack down the field. He is not afraid to hang tight in the pocket and will push it vertically. His accuracy and ball placement stand out. His anticipation stands out. To me, Geno Smith is still playing at a high level.
I would agree. And, one point you just made is 100% correct. He will stand and deliver, and he can throw the ball. There's never been an issue with Geno Smith and the way he can throw the ball. But he is tough in the pocket. He will stand and deliver, and he can make some really strong tight window throws. So, I think, the assumption is he'll play this week because I believe he was close to being a game time decision anyway on Sunday. So you have to believe that he'll play this week against the Eagles. But they have a lot of really good players. I mean, we've mentioned the three wideouts. Those tight ends they have, they might not be household names. But, like I said, I've been watching Seattle for years, and these guys are very good at what they're asked to do. And they're not bad receivers at all. I'm not suggesting that if they should be the foundation of an offense and they catch 120 balls. But in their own way, they're good players. Will Disley is a good player. Parkinson is actually a relatively athletic guy for a big guy. Fan has always been a guy who can run vertically ever since he came out of Iowa. I mean, he's been that guy. So they've got three tight ends that all kind of serve a different purpose, but they're all good in their own way.
They all contribute both as pass catchers and as run blockers. Yep. I wouldn't say either of them or any of the three of them are dominant in, especially as a blocker, but they all contribute and have their roles to be able to play there. We saw the long catch and run on the middle screen for Parkinson this week. We know Fant could be a seam stretcher. We've seen Disley be a red zone weapon. So they all kind of have their niche in this offense. And you mentioned the play action element. I feel like that was something that was missing to a certain extent just because the run game could never really get going when Kenneth Walker was out of the lineup. He missed a couple games over the last month, but he returned to the field this past week against San Francisco. And while they ended up going a little bit with Charbonnet when they got in the middle of the game, just because it was like a hot hand, he had a couple of long runs there. But Walker is the guy that gives them juice. I mean, he's the guy that can create those explosives that Charbonnet, the rookie second round pick out of UCLA, he's not going to give you that. But Walker certainly does.
Yeah, and I think that we know Pete Carroll wants to run the football. Walker, assuming the game plays out the way they want it to play out, I would imagine this week Walker would be 15-plus carries. Maybe he'll get spelled by Charbonnet here and there. But, Walker gives them juice, and Walker can break runs, and that's the thing. And, he gives them an explosive element in the backfield. So, we'll see how they choose to play against the Eagles. Obviously, the Eagles have struggled with pass defense. We'll see. This will be an 11 personnel week where they'll line up in 11 and, feel that, hey, we can protect. I think Charles Cross, their left tackle, has been up and down, quite honestly. Lucas, the right tackle, missed a lot of time, and they were playing our good buddy Jason Peters was getting a ton of snaps, but Lucas has been back for a couple of weeks. I know Peters played some snaps this week, but it's going to be Lucas.
Yeah.
Those guys have been solid, but beatable at times. I think their interior is beatable as well. So, we'll see how that plays out, how they feel they can best attack this Eagles defense, because you can look at their secondary and feel, we can throw it with the weapons we have, but you can't throw it if you can't protect. And one thing about Geno, while he's not a statue, he is a pocket quarterback.
Yep. Oh, no question. And that's the one thing that honestly that stood out to me from that Dallas game was, he was under duress the entire night. Yeah. He didn't take a sack. He wasn't sacked in that game. And I think that kind of speaks to Geno.
It's very rare.
Out of his head.
Last year, it's not the case this year, but last year he was far and away the most sacked quarterback in the league on third down.
Yeah.
He will stand there. And that's one reason why he does get sacked at times, because he's not quick to leave.
Well, you mentioned third down, and you know, obviously that's a big topic for this offense going into matching up against the Eagles. And so I thought, all right, let me just look and really kind of do a little bit of a study into what they do on third down. And I was a little surprised. You mentioned Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the rookie first-round pick from Ohio State, how he got injured in training camp, so he's a little bit of a slow burn getting into the season and you know getting kind of up to speed in the offense. Well, he actually leads their team right now in third down targets, you know, and by a handful. So I thought that was interesting considering he had missed that first chunk of the year. Now, when you look at overall targets, DK Metcalf way out in front, Tyler Lockett still ahead of JSN. But when it gets the third down, Smith-Njigba, and look, when we watched him at Ohio State, he had a really productive season 2 years ago. Three years ago, where he's got, so he's got that ability to separate against man. He's a really shifty route runner. He's really good at the catch point, and we saw that finish against San Francisco a couple weeks ago where he looked it in over the shoulder on Thanksgiving night, and then also the ability to find the soft spot in zone coverage as well. He's just a very schooled player in that sense.
Yeah, and I remember watching him at the combine, and I'm sure you do as well. Again, you're just watching guys in shorts and a t-shirt, but you get a feel for the way they move, and he was just so quick in and out of breaks. He may have been the quickest guy at the combine in and out of breaks, and he just looks so smooth. And he showed that on film in that big year at Ohio State, which I think was that 20...
It would have been 2021.
Yeah, 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, so he comes in, and he's been a really nice possession player for them, moving the chains, but then you still have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett working outside the numbers. Metcalf is still putting up big numbers for a guy that with that height, weight, speed. He's going to be a matchup problem regardless. But I know he set some milestones this week in terms of what he's done over the first 5 years of his career. 6'4", 235 pounds. The guy hits 22 miles per hour on the GPS repeatedly. Just one of the freakiest players at receiver in the league. And he's going to be a downfield threat. So you have to make sure that you keep him contained in this game because, again, Geno Smith will hang tight and will push the ball vertically down the field.
You hit 22 on the GPS, right?
Yeah, without thinking about it. I just say it's almost like I blink and it happens.
But the last thing you want is to get beat over the top by Metcalf. Yes. I mean, you know, that's the last, you know, which, again, to some degree, that's something the Eagles do have to be concerned about in this game because, you know, they have given up some plays and their pass defense has been a little up and down. That's the last thing you want to have happen.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett still making plays for them. Yep. He caught all six of his targets, led the team in receiving this past week against San Francisco as well. So you're dealing with those three guys. Jake Bobo, a rookie that not a lot of people are familiar with, but undrafted free agent out of UCLA, 6'4", over 200 pounds. I know they love him in that building, Greg, and he's kind of that dirty work guy. He's that fourth receiver or third, sometimes even a second or third receiver, depending on the situation. They bring him in on the goal line, and he chips in as a blocker. He does all kinds of different stuff for them. So he's a guy that you'll see him on Monday night as well.
Yeah, and he's a guy that doesn't run real well, but he just seems to be a guy that when he's asked to do whatever it is he's asked to do, he does it well.
Yeah. All right, let's go over to the defensive side. Pete Carroll, obviously heavy-handed with the defense. Yep. You have a defense coordinator in Clint Hurt as well. Your thoughts on the identity of this defense?
Yeah, they're a heavy, heavy zone-based defense. Yep. They don't play a ton of man coverage. They play a lot of big nickel, and they'll play big nickel with three safeties even versus 11 personnel at times, depending down in distance and field location. In that big nickel, when they do play it, Jamal Adams is essentially a linebacker, which a lot of people think is his, you know, ideally what he really is. He's kind of a weak side linebacker anyway, based on his traits. And they play Love and Diggs, you know, kind of on the back end. You know, Witherspoon got hurt on Sunday. I guess we don't
rookie
know.
First round pick, top five pick.
We don't know if he'll play. His tape has been kind of fun to watch. I think that he's an aggressive, feisty corner. When they play in their base defense, which is normally their base defense is a five-man front with two stacked backers, Wagner and Brooks. But when they play in their base defense, which I guess will be dependent on how much 12 personnel the Eagles play, which may not be much, but we'll find out. But normally in their base, Witherspoon is the left corner and Woolen is the right corner. When they go to nickel, Witherspoon, if healthy, moves inside and plays the slot. And then Trey Brown, when healthy, will play on the outside. Or if not healthy, it's Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and so Trey Brown, who was that third corner that you mentioned, he missed this past week with a heel injury. Now, he was questionable. You would think that he would probably will play. You mentioned Devin Witherspoon got banged up against San Francisco. It was reported that he has a hip pointer and is likely going to be questionable for the game, but it felt like, reading some quotes from Pete Carroll on Monday, that it felt like Witherspoon probably would be on track to play. So I'd expect that we probably will see the rookie first-round pick. You know, it's funny because when he first – because he was a little bit banged up early in the year too.
That's correct.
And, you know, watching him when he first came in and he was playing a lot in the slot, I was like, man, like they really have something here. And it felt like as the year went on and that secondary got a little healthier, that's when they're going to lean more into this big nickel and we're going to get Jamal Adams on the field and do more of this and we're going to play him more on the outside. And it's like, man, like I almost wish like just leave that guy in the slot and let him be a game wrecker because he was impacting the game in so many different ways. That said, I mean, he's still making plays on the outside and then occasionally when they slide him inside to play in their regular nickel. But look, when they play, whether it's in base or any situation where Adams is in space, that's a matchup you can try and take advantage of. San Francisco certainly did that. You had the long ball to Deebo Samuel running past Adams early on in that football game on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think he's a player in past coverage you want to try to take advantage of. And even though it's not, they don't play a ton of man, you know, you still can take advantage of guys in their zone responsibility areas. And he's one player you do try to do that with. I mean, that's just, you know, he's just not, that's never been his strength. Even when he came out of LSU as, I believe, the sixth pick in the draft for the Jets as he was a great college player. And he's certainly a tempo setter. He's one of those kinds of players. But pass coverage is certainly not his strength.
That unit just kind of plays with an edge. And that's always been the case. But because those are the kind of players they bring in. Yeah. But even early on in that game against San Francisco, I mean, they were giving it to San Francisco early on. There was a lot of physical play over the middle of the field. You mentioned Jamal Adams, but, you know, Witherspoon, he plays with an edge. Jordan Brooks plays with an edge. Obviously, Bobby Wagner, Diggs plays with an edge. A lot of those guys up front are edgy guys. So you're going to get that kind of attitude, you know, from this defense.
I thought Leonard Williams has he's played well since he's been there, and I thought he stood out this week against the Niners. Another thing, just as their year has progressed, Draymond Jones, who's an Ohio State kid who predominantly was an interior player at Ohio State and through much of his career, this year over the last 6-7 weeks they've moved him almost exclusively to the edge as an edge pass rusher playing in their sub fronts because he started the year playing inside. Obviously, when they got Leonard Williams, that increased it as well. But he has now essentially become an edge player for them.
What do you think of that?
I think his traits, I think he's got good pass rush traits. I don't know if he truly is an edge pass rusher in terms of overall. But his traits lend themselves to rushing the quarterback.
Yeah, and obviously they gave him a lot of money here this offseason, so you don't want to just send him to the bench when you trade a second-round pick.
No.
Williams, and so, you know, trying to find room for him. They've got a number of young rushers on that team and guys that they've put significant capital into, a trio of second-round picks. Boye Mafe got out to a fast start here this year. He's cooled off a little bit.
Yeah, the kid who I always liked, and it hasn't happened yet, and it may never happen, is the Tennessee kid, Darrell Taylor.
He
looks the part. And every once in a while he flashes, but he just hasn't shown enough. Then they have the rookie this year from Auburn, Hall, who, you know, I really liked his tape at Auburn. And you know, they give him 15, 18 snaps a game. They play a good amount of people. They've got a rookie D tackle from Mississippi State, Cameron Young, who I liked his tape, too, coming out of college. And he probably gets about 12, 15 snaps a game as well.
Yeah, disruptive player. My guess is he'll start to play more as they move on from Jaron Reed. But Jaron Reed, the starting nose tackle, he's playing well, especially against the run. Yeah.
Yeah, he's had a good year. No question. Yeah.
And then at linebacker, lastly, just to wrap it up, you got the younger guy in Jordan Brooks, a former first-round pick out of Texas in 2020. He's really explosive, really violent on contact. His eyes can let him down a little bit. He can be manipulated at times, but really, really gifted. And then Bobby Wagner, who's kind of the opposite, just because of where he's at this stage in his career. Right, he's getting by purely with his eyes and his instincts.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about Brooks because he's kind of a see it and go player.
Yeah,
and but there was a stretch. It was before he tore his ACL, so it was probably 2 years ago, maybe. Where for about 6 or 7 weeks, I thought he was playing as well as any stack backer in the league. I mean, he just every week I'd watch Seattle's D, and he was just, you know, one of those guys where you always just say, "Boy, he's making every play." I mean, he just had that kind of stretch. Then he got hurt, but he's still a really good player.
Yeah. I mean, use him as a blitzer. He'll get home. Yep. I've seen him with sacks this year. He had the pick six against San Francisco a couple weeks ago. So that's a guy that can impact the game in a lot of ways. You have to be aware of him, certainly, whenever he's out on the field. So, Greg, we will be breaking this down next Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. It's a Monday nighter. Flex to Monday night football.
The first Monday night flex in NFL history, Eagles and Seahawks. So, look, it's going to be a big game. Like I mentioned, for the Eagles, a lot on the line here as they try and keep pace here in the NFC East and try and hold on to that pole position. But, Greg, thanks so much for joining us, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Fran.
Great stuff from Greg. Thanks to him, and thanks to all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our X's and O's content here with Eagles Entertainment. That being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovoCare Complex, I am Fran Duffy. We will talk to you later this week.